right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. The death toll is now 95 dead and more than 163 others wounded in Kabul, Afghanistan. A suicide car bomber detonated an ambulance in a crowded area outside a government building. Unconfirmed reports said the death toll is much higher than what Afghan officials have reported thus far. The Taliban immediately took responsibility for plotting that attack. U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis says the United States will continue to hold the line and provide credible military options to diplomats working to de-escalate the tensions on the Korean Peninsula and address Pyongyang's nuclear and missile threat. Speaking on his flight before landing at Pearl Harbor, Mattis also noted that the U.S. is ready to fight tonight alongside South Korea if attacked by the North.
Our response to this threat remains diplomacy-led, backed up with military options available to ensure that our diplomats are understood to be speaking from a position of strength.
His comments come as North and South Korea engage in talks about next month's Winter Olympics in South Korea. North Korea has agreed to send a delegation to those games. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has repeated his intention to expand Ankara's military operation in a Kurdish enclave in Syria, targeting fighters he says are linked to a Kurdish terror group that operates in Turkey. Speaking there, he says his forces will push further east to Afrin, which is just beyond the Syrian border. The move could pit Turkish forces against about 2,000 U.S. troops who are there fighting against the Islamic State. This is VOA News. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions is supporting President Donald Trump's immigration reform proposal, announced this week. In a speech on immigration and national security in Norfolk, Virginia, Sessions said a merit-based immigration system would be in the U.S. national interest. Sessions also suggests that there are links between immigration, terrorism, and crime. He blamed lax migration or immigration laws for allowing terrorists into the country.
Any crime committed by improperly vetted immigrants, especially illegal aliens, is by definition a preventable crime.
In addition to eliminating a family-sponsored migration, the plan would establish a $25 billion trust fund for a wall along the Mexican border, providing funding for the president's core campaign promise, something that has been criticized by Democrats in Washington and Congress. Former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Bill Richardson, a supporter of Myanmar's pro-democracy movement, resigned from a panel set up by Aung San Suu Kyi to help implement a recommendation for long-term solution to the Rakhine crisis, and he spoke with VOA about this.
I resigned. They didn't fire me. In fact, they were begging me, the National Security Advisor, to stay on desperately. This is their normal practice. Correct. They did not. I was pursuing my own agenda, which was against the agenda of the advisory board, which was to whitewash everything.
More than 680,000 Rohingya have fled to Bangladesh. A small space flight startup has successfully sent a rocket into low Earth orbit for the first time from a base in New Zealand. Rocket Lab says that it is the first company to send satellites into space from its own launch facility on New Zealand's North Island.
New Zealand has joined a small and exclusive club of spacefaring nations. Rocket Lab's launch in the Mahia Peninsula could allow smaller companies to launch satellites into space for far cheaper than its traditional rivals, at around $4.9 million per launch. The rocket used an engine designed and made in New Zealand. In what's believed to be a first, the engine used electric pumps to drive parts of the machinery. The joint US-New Zealand startup aims to disrupt the established space sector by launching its satellite-carrying rockets every week. They'd have a wide range of uses, from monitoring crops to providing internet service. The company hopes to begin commercial launches next year.
Phil Mercer reporting for VOA. And this Saturday marks Holocaust Remembrance Day, the anniversary of the liberation of the Auschwitz Nazi death camp in 1945. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
Yeah, officially, I mean, we are expecting 17 political parties, but as of today, we are expecting seven, but it's very likely that we only do two. Today is the end of the nomination itself.
The Sierra Leonean National Electoral Commission concludes nomination for candidates for the upcoming March 7 general election.
The three of them, 15 years, some 10 years, that is 5, and the four of them, 5 years.
A Nigerian court sentences coup plotters to various jail terms in the capital, Niamey.
It's 32 years of disappointment, 32 years of broken promises, 32 years of deception, 32 years of missed opportunities.
And Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni marks 32 years in office on Friday. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Sierra Leonean National Electoral Commission, or NEC, has officially ended accepting the nomination of all candidates who will participate in the upcoming March 7 elections. The deadline for the nomination for the candidates was Friday. Former Foreign Minister Samura Kamara filed his nomination Friday as the candidate to represent the ruling All People's Congress, or APC, in the presidential poll. To learn more about the plans to organize the general election, I reached Mohamed Imfa Ali Conte, chairman for the Sierra Leonean National Electoral Commission in the capital, Freetown.
For the past while, we were working on nomination, but for the past days, we have nominated up to 11 presidential candidates.
So how many more are left to go before the nomination is officially concluded?
Well, in actual fact, there are seven more political parties, but without. As I speak to you, for now there are only two. We have the All People's Congress and the UDM, United Democratic Movement. Yeah, officially, I mean, we are expecting 17 political parties, but as of today, we are expecting seven. But it's very likely that we only do two. Today is the end of the nomination itself.
So Friday is the end of official nomination for any candidate that is willing to participate in the March 7 general election.
In the March 7 presidential election, yes. For all of presidential, parliamentary, and local council elections, yes.
So after the nomination Friday, what is the next phase of the Electoral Commission's plans to organize this March 7 general election?
Well, the law says after the presidential nominations today, we'll publish the list in the Gazette either Monday or Tuesday. Then any citizen of Sierra Leone may object to any of the presidential candidates, but that objection will be made at the Supreme Court. But after, if there are no nominations, of course, we'll go ahead. So next week, we want to make sure that at least we make them ballot for the campaign. And the campaign will start this February.
I understand some presidential candidates had problems with dual nationality and all kinds of things. Has the Electoral Commission resolved all these before gazetting on Monday or Tuesday?
No, we'll wait for the objection. Actually, if that's the case, then objections will be made at the Supreme Court. So that's why we're waiting maybe up to next week.
Mr. Conte, how are Sierra Leoneans reacting to this nomination process? How exciting are they? How responsive are they? And how they are accompanying their candidates to the Electoral Commission office?
Well, generally, Sierra Leoneans are excited. I mean, as I am talking to you, we have thousands of APC supporters in red and white out there. Yesterday, we had the SLPP in green. The other day we had the Coalition for Change, just like that. They are really, really excited. And the process itself is transparent. It's going very smoothly. You know, so the political parties, the mayor and their members are really excited.
Mr. Conte, how about the voter register? What assurances are you giving the people of Sierra Leone or prospective Sierra Leonean voters about the credibility and transparency of the voter register that will be used for the elections?
Well, I want to assure everybody that the register itself is credible. I mean, The people have taken nominations on the register. If they are not credible, you can't take nomination on the register. Nominations are ending. We finish local council election. We're about to finish parliamentary election. And maybe the next 2 hours, we'll finish presidential election. And these are taken on the nomination, on the voter's register. That's the voter ID card. But if you don't have that one, we can't nominate you. So to me, it's credible.
What is the cooperation so far between the Electoral Commission, Mr. Chairman, and the various political parties in terms of code of conduct of how to encourage their supporters not to be violent, to respect rule of law and rules governing elections in Sierra Leone in the run-up to the elections?
Well, the cooperation is good because we hold meetings with them every 2 weeks. We call it political parties committee. We hold meetings with them, and they have all signed a code of conduct. It's a prerequisite. When you are nominated, you sign a code of campaign ethics, right? It's just the basic rules and regulations of a civilized campaign. So our relationship with political parties, it's good. It's good, honestly.
Your message to the people of Sierra Leone ahead of finishing or completing the nomination for presidential candidate as well as the anticipated gazetting next week?
Yes. Well, my message to Sierra Leoneans is that, we are committed to conduct credible elections. The process itself is very transparent. We take the nominations, we finish the voters' register, we finish boundaries, we finish nominations today. The next phase of the process is actually campaigning, right? And after that is the elections. But we are also working for campaigns. We are working with the Office of National Unity, ONS, Office of National Security, and the Sierra Leone Police. We are all working together.
Mohamed Infa Ali Conte is the chairman for the Sierra Leonean National Electoral Commission. He spoke with me from Freetown. Nigerian tribunal has jailed 9 soldiers for between 5 and 15 years on Friday for an attempted coup against President Muhammadu Isufu 2 years ago. The country's law does not allow for an appeal. The government said in 2015 that it foiled a coup after arresting people it said were planning to use aerial firepower to seize control of the country. In his ruling, Judge Ibrahim Daudika sentenced the suspected ringleader, General Salu Salumani, for 15 years and 2 others. For more on the ruling, I reach Abdul Kamardeen, a human rights activist in the capital, Niamey.
So, yesterday, they were brought before a military tribunal, okay? So, after the defenders, the lawyers defended them, almost people wanted them to be released because here people are thinking that it's some other military around the presidency just created it. It is not a true attempt. Some generals are counseling the president. So they are the ones who created the plot. The plot is not a real plot. You know, it's an imaginative plot.
How many years did they give some of these alleged plotters?
So, like I'm saying, the 3 of them, 15 years, some 2, 10 years, that is 5, and 4 of them, 5 years for one each of them. Yeah. But some 3 have been released yesterday. 1 civilian and 2 soldiers.
Why were they released? Did the tribunal say why they released them while the others were jailed?
Like the tribunal was saying, they have been released because, you know, before them, there are some 9 to 10 politicians who have been released a year back. You know, they are saying their implication was not full and active. So that is why those 3 2 have been released yesterday.
What did the court say after releasing the three people on Friday?
When releasing them, the court explained that those three were not fully implicated. Their names have been considered. The plotters have not gained their go-ahead, if you want.
Some Nigerians, I understand, are saying this is all a political calculation because the president is becoming unpopular. That is why they brought this. So it will remind people that the government survived or prevented a coup. So in the next election,
yes,
he could win. What do you say to that?
You know, if we get back to 2013, you can see that the regime had a problem with his main, if you want, supporter. That was the party of Ahmadu, you know. So it was, if you want, at the edge of the election for the second mandate of the president, you know. So the calculation was that they have to create a situation whereby people can, let's say, support them by saying, like it is the opposition that is backing the coup plot, which is not true, rather, you see. So even now, you know, it's like they have, let's say, their new budget for the 2018 is actually people are making rallies to show that they are against it because it is really anti-social, you know. So that is why they are doing things like that, to say that they need money because the country is in insecurity everywhere. All the countries surrounding us are in trouble. So they are able to, let's say, to make the country in full security.
So how is the mood in the country at the moment, especially in the capital, Niamey?
In the capital, Niamey, let's say, really, people are not happy because, like, you know, on the market, every price is going higher and higher. Even the transportation is going higher and everywhere it's either 20%, 30%. The least is 10% of inflation, you know, which is too bad.
Abdul Kamaradin is a human rights activist in Niger. He spoke with me from Niamey. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni marked 32 years in office on Friday. The president says since he took over power, Uganda has seen a massive economic expansion and infrastructural development attractive to foreign investors. He says Ugandans are better off now than they were when he took power. Museveni underscored the importance of improved security and the country's democratic credentials as evidence that the lives of Ugandans keep improving. For reaction to his 32-year leadership, I reach Erias Lukwago, the Lord Mayor of the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
Generally, I should say it's 32 years of disappointment, 32 years of broken promises, 32 years of deception, 32 years of missed opportunities. It's regrettable. President Museveni went to the bush with a promise that he was going to restore rule of law. He was going to usher in fundamental change, not a mere change of guards, but he was going to usher in meaningful transformation of the country. And the bottom line was, the starting point rather was enactment or promulgation of a durable national constitution, a constitution that will guide the democratic transition of this country.
President Museveni said the country has had strong democratic credentials following his 32 years, and this is good. So nobody should teach him about democracy. Your take?
Well, I don't know what prompted that kind of statement, but I'm sure he was responding to voices from all over the world calling him upon to respect the constitutional order we have in this country, respect the promises. They were calling him to honor the commitments he made at the time he was taking over government, that he was going to promulgate a new constitution that would open up a new chapter in the political trajectory of this country. And everybody believed him. Many Ugandans and leaders across the globe believed him, that indeed he was a leader who was a beacon of hope on the entire African continent. He was among the new breed of African leaders. Ugandans vested their trust in him because they believed in what he said. He came up with what he called the 10-point program that was going to guide the policy formulation for his government. And subsequently, the constitution was promulgated after 10 years with his rule. And Ugandans thought he was going to usher in a fundamental change. Now everyone is disillusioned. Even those who are within the NRM system, they are mere hostages. I'll tell you, even those who are serving in his cabinet, those who are within the NRM party as members of parliament, those who sit in the party organs, all Ugandans across the board are all disillusioned.
People in Uganda are saying because of his 32-year rule, he has the experience, he's improved security, there's infrastructural development across the country. Do you deny these?
Let me tell you, that is all rhetoric. He has run down the state structure, that everything now hinges around him. He has created a cabal, a group of a few individuals who are benefiting from his government. A few individuals. As we talk right now, the public debt has risen to a tune of around 8 something billion US dollars. He has mortgaged our country. Not only that, he has created a situation where a vast majority of Ugandans are impoverished. The statistics we are getting right now, last year, the poverty levels were at 19%. Right now, it has gone to 21%, and the trend continues.
Supporters of the NRM, including the president himself, have said the country is open for business. There's a lot of investors coming in. There's economic growth and expansion, and that Ugandans feel much more economically improved than they were before he came to power. And that, you know, people are way better off than they used to be. What do you say to that?
That is deception. He is using statistics which do not add up, which have been manufactured by his own institutions to deceive the international community. But actually, things are okay here, that the Ugandans are doing well. But when vast majority of Ugandans are wallowing in abject poverty, I've told you how the poverty levels have risen. I've told you how he has mortgaged the country to the extent that actually the debt portfolio is, the public debt is almost 35% of the national GDP. It's almost becoming unsustainable. I've told you how a few individuals are benefiting from this. So if you looked at the GDP per capita, you'd find majority of Ugandans are in abject poverty. So it's a few individuals who are benefiting from the apparent goal. There is no equitable distribution of resources.
Erias Lukwago is the Lord Mayor of the Ugandan capital, Kampala. He spoke with me from Kampala. The main opposition Malawi Congress Party, or MCP, will this Sunday hold a National Executive Committee meeting. It comes amid a sharp disagreement between party president Lazarus Chakwera and the faction of his deputy Richard Nsowoya and Secretary General Gustav Kaliwo. Local media reports that the opposition group's National Executive Committee will set dates for the party convention ahead of next year's elections. Supporters of the party are demanding an immediate resolution of the ongoing conflict in the the party. For the latest development, I reach Eisenhower Nkaka, Deputy General Secretary and spokesperson for the opposition Malawi Congress Party in the capital, Lilongwe.
In terms of corporate governance, these are regular meetings that we normally have to discuss issues affecting the party, management of the party, etc., etc. So it's not a unique meeting. These are regular meetings that we have. And on the agenda is about how we are running the party and how we are approaching the future and things of that nature.
Talking about running the affairs of the party as well as issues affecting the party that you raised, there are concerns that there is factionalism between the leadership of the party, and there seemed to be a rift between President Lazarus Chakwera, or the leader of the party, and the faction of his deputy, Richard Nsowoya, and Secretary General Gustav Kaliwo. Will this be discussed?
I am yet to see the agenda, because I think it was the management meeting that met last week, or 2 weeks ago, and I did not attend that meeting, and I am yet to get the agenda from the president's secretary, because I think she was busy today arranging papers and stuff like that. So I think I can only come back to talk about the agenda of the meeting after I've seen it.
With this reported factionalism and possible divisions within the rank and file of the main opposition Malawi Congress Party, how do you intend wrestling power from the ruling party, particularly when last time we spoke, you remained confident, saying that you are so popular, the party is so popular, and that because the government is unpopular, you will get power in next year's election. But there's a glaring disunity among the party. Why should Malawians trust you?
Well, I think what is happening in the party should not be blown out of proportion. This thing has been there. One of the American presidents did say, if people will always agree or do not agree on certain issues, then one of them is not necessary. So where there are two people or more, you expect some disagreements here and there. But let me take you back to the 17th October by-elections, where we got five places. We won in five places out of the six. The winning took place happened actually at the time these disagreements were still there. So it's a question of the top people not agreeing on certain issues and stuff like that, but this has not affected the grassroots politics and stuff like that. The party has still kept growing, and we are confident that once this thing is resolved, we are wresting power from the ruling party.
Some Malawians are saying if there are glaring divisions and the MCP is unwilling or has failed to resolve these problems, why should Malawians trust you with the power that the DPP has right now under President Arthur Peter Mutharika to be given to you? Why not go with him, since you appear not to solve your internal problems and is being reported in the local media?
It is not true that we have failed to resolve these matters. As a matter of fact, we have been trying to take the route of contact and dialogue to make sure that these matters are resolved. Besides, one thing that you need to understand is that as we approach the convention, these things should naturally be expected. Even in the DPP, we are quite aware that there are divisions, and you will see them pronounced as they go towards the convention, because people try to position, people try to protect positions and stuff like that. So these things naturally happen. Even in America, I think these things should, as people go towards their convention, elective convention, you expect people, alignments and stuff like that. So these are not strange things to happen in my Congress Party. This is how we should understand these things.
So you still remain confident that Malawi Congress Party will form the next government next year?
Extremely, extremely confident that the Malawi Congress Party is forming the next government.
Eisenhower Nkaka is the Deputy General Secretary and spokesperson for the Malawi Congress Party, MCP. He spoke with me from Lilongwe. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, two of the largest mass vaccination campaigns against yellow fever ever seen in the world have begun in Nigeria and Brazil. Both campaigns, which are supported by the World Health Organization, aim to prevent the spread of the disease. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
Nigeria plans to vaccinate more than 25 million people throughout the coming year, making this the largest yellow fever campaign in the country's history. In preparation, the World Health Organization has trained thousands of healthcare workers on how to administer the vaccine. The WHO says nearly 3,000 vaccination teams are being deployed across the states of Kogi, Kwara, Zamfara, and Borno. In the case of Borno State, it says the campaign will focus on camps for internally displaced people and host communities. WHO spokesman Tarek Jazarevich says the goal of the campaign is to reduce yellow fever transmission by achieving 90% coverage in those states.
It is a part of an initiative to eliminate yellow fever epidemics. As you know, we cannot eradicate the yellow fever virus, because it is being transmitted by mosquitoes. But with an effective vaccine that exists for a number of years now, it can be prevented. So mass vaccination is the best way to prevent outbreaks of yellow fever.
The WHO reports the mass immunization campaign launched in Brazil will deliver so-called fractional doses of yellow fever to nearly 24 million people in Rio de Janeiro and Sao Paulo. Fractional dosing is a way of extending vaccine supplies so more people are protected from the spread of the disease. A full dose of vaccine provides lifelong protection against yellow fever. One-fifth of the regular dose confers immunity against the disease for at least 12 months and possibly longer. That is considered an effective short-term strategy in places where the vaccine is in short supply. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Right now, it's time for music from our African collection.
Ni kama moyo wangu umetekwa nyara ama umenyekea hirisi
ama amani ndoto minaota
baby umenitega umenitega na siwezi jitegua baby umenitega umenitega na siwezi jitegua penzi lako moto inanifanya nijisi mtoto.
I'm gonna talk to me, give me love, make me feel it, love me, make me love again. What did you want to know? If I tell my heartbreak, my pins on a shot, then I'll go back and repeat again. Why don't you think my babu menya, wa menya kakuruma, kuruma kubagwe na ya galamuna ge ya numya. I gave a full love in and I gave all of my heart. What a pity we were never, and if I never ever.
I'm a slave in love, I'm a slave in love.
Oh, chameleon. Chameleon. Chameleon.
I'm a slave in love, I'm a slave in love. Whoa.
so me say. Yo, they be nasty. Ninja, where you at, girl? Me day I'm on, no tigger me first, see a point to some me dude. Big things are going fire upon the place. Black supremacy in the hall. Bombo clan. Yo, ex, watch this. Too long, me me vumilia boo. Kuna ma kiss me, but this game, now you know me kuna do. I am a fan, she die. Nani chenga baker, bigger chenga kaba, she got sipa, kipa. Nothing a refer, no sin a defender. Baby, when it just a in love, I don't wanna, waste my time. You miss a key, Tronicky Waza. Nothing you're gonna do, nothing you're gonna say, nothing will take my smile away. I don't wanna, waste my time. You miss a key, Tronicky Waza. Nothing you're gonna do, nothing you're gonna say, nothing will take. Mina no aina go show see kwenye visa na vita lakini acha stress she can break you watch the fanny skiza wakipanda juu wakitisha moyo juu what you gonna do bye I don't wanna waste my time you miss that future nikki waza and nothing you gonna do nothing you gonna say nothing will take my smile away I don't wanna waste my time you miss that future nikki waza and nothing you gonna do nothing you're gonna say nothing will take hey. What I'm gonna do, take my mood, drop it like I'm on fire. Baby, listen to me, cause I don't care what you will say. You need for me someday. Nothing, no, no, no. Baby, you need for me that way. Baby, you need for me that way. Nothing, I'm shocking that way.
Nothing, I'm shocking that way.
ayapa me umea toka u ekuse me yo be ma ayapa me umea toka u ekuse me yo be ma ayapa me umea toka u ekuse me yo be ma ayapa me umea toka u ekuse me anukwa
me what designer. Them no bought me yesterday. I know say your love will cost you something. But you they do me something, something. You they do me like you Ghana. I see the fire in your eyes, burning like a cigarette. Baby girl, are you from Ghana? Or you coming from Somalia? Are you coming from Uganda? Or you coming from Nigeria? African bag, baby, don't change your style. Girl, I love you the way you are. The way you are. Feeling your dancing, girl. Size on the beat, girl. Yeah, feeling your dancing, girl. Starboy, keep the beat. Them no buy me yesterday. Be a freaky girl and wanna. I put my hand up on your waist. Baby girl, you are the one. Oh, baby, you got to something. Give me all of your love, I want it. Baby girl, stop with all the fronting. The way you dance, I know you want this. Baby girl, you're from Angola. Sister from South Africa. Pretty girl, I wanna hold ya. Talk to my ladies in Nigeria. African bad girl, baby, don't change your style. Girl, I love you the way you are. The way you are. Feeling your dancing, huh? Size on the beat, huh? Yeah, yeah. Feeling your dancing, huh? Yeah, yeah. Starboy, keep the beat. Girl, I'll make you dance. Say if you like conto, make you dance. Say if you like this or if you like that. Say if you like bounce, make you bounce. Say if you like, girl, I'll make you dance. Say if you like conto, make you dance. Say if you like this or if you like that. Say if you like bounce, make you bounce. I love the things you do to me. I feel alright. I love the feeling that I feel. I'm feeling nice. I love the things you do to me. I feel alright. You give me life, you give me life, you give me life. See, baby girl, please, baby girl, Joe for me. I'ma get Joe for me. With your sexy body, yo, with your sexy body. Baby girl, please, baby girl, Joe for me. I'ma get Joe for me. With your sexy body, yo, with your sexy body. African bag, yo. Baby, don't change your style. Girl, I love you the way you are. The way you are, feeling your dancing, huh? Yeah, yeah. Stars on the beat, huh? Yeah, yeah. Feeling your dancing, huh? Yeah, Starboy, keep the beat.
And that was Music from the Continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Saleh, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, if you search for the laws of harmony, you will find knowledge. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. government, through the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, launched a civil society and media strengthening project in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, in mid-January. It is called Boresha Habari, or Better News. Implemented in coordination with nonprofit organizations Internews and FHI 360, the Boresha Habari Project will collaborate with Tanzanian partners, including the Media Council of Tanzania, Tanzania Boro Initiative, and Jamii Media, to improve professional capacity among journalists and support an open media environment. Over the next 5 years, the Beresha Habari Project aims to work with media houses and radio stations in Dar es Salaam, Zanzibar, Iringa, Mbeya, Morogoro, Arusha, Manyara, Dodoma, Tanga, Mtwara, Mwanza, and Kigoma to improve their professional capacities. Specifically, Boresha Habari will provide media outlets with training and technical assistance, help them adopt new digital technologies, and strengthen their management and financial viability. The project will also train civil society organizations to effectively partner with the media. The U.S. government is committed to supporting the professionalization of the Tanzanian media and civil society, particularly empowering women and youth to raise their voices and concerns effectively as both producers and consumers of information, remarked USAID Mission Director Andy Karas during the launch event. The United States is proud to work with its partner, Tanzania, to help build a strong and vibrant civil society supported by a free and independent media.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.